Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in a Tuesday edition, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. 2 days from Thanksgiving. We know a lot of you are on the road traveling all over the country. We appreciate you finding a way to listen to the show. Also having a fantastic time here. I am in Florida, where my family has already begun to relocate here for the week of Thanksgiving. Buck is in New York City. And we have to begin the show by commending the interview with Kyle Rittenhouse that Tucker Carlson did last night. If you have not watched the entire interview, I would encourage you to go do so. You can watch it on YouTube. They have posted it all. This is, I believe, a signature moment in narrative lies overtaking true facts and the world that we have created being so divergent, where people on the left wing believe Kyle Rittenhouse may have killed minorities, had no justification, crossed state lines with a rifle, and got away with murder. And for the most part, they believe that because they haven't paid any attention to the actual evidence in this case at all. But hearing Kyle Rittenhouse speak, both on the witness stand in his trial and also with Tucker Carlson walking through all of the decisions that he has made, it is difficult not only to recognize that Kyle Rittenhouse is not guilty of any crime, but also I think it's difficult to argue that this is not a teenager that you should hold in some measure of esteem. That is, you should be happy to employ him based on what I have seen. You should be happy to be his teacher if you were in school. You should be happy that he has gone on to education at Arizona State right now, presuming they don't kick him out, although I'd be afraid that that might happen, and I hope that there are other universities out there that would extend a hand to him in the event that that occurs at Arizona State. Buck, I would even go so far as to say, of people who could take your daughter to prom, Kyle Rittenhouse is not in an awful category there. I know there are a lot of dads out there that get really nervous about who might take their daughter to prom. Based on the interviews that I've seen with this kid, there are a lot worse prom dates out there than Kyle Rittenhouse. He is 100% innocent. And what the media has done to him, Buck, is one of, I would put it in context with Richard Jewell on some level. I would put it in context with Duke Lacrosse. It is one of the great failures of American media that this kid was ever charged with a crime and that anyone is going to say he belongs in jail. And anyone who is arguing this is arguing it not based on the facts, but based entirely on the narrative that they want to believe. Did you have the same takeaways having watched this interview and also the trial?
Yes.
It's not just
yes.
The interview.
Yes, absolutely. And the more that you learn about Kyle Rittenhouse, the more you actually start to see that he's a heroic kid.
Yeah.
You know, self-defense, you might not say necessarily is an issue of heroism. It's an issue of necessity. And he defended himself against the mob. But his act, remember, what they tried to say for a while was that his very presence. And, you know, now that I know more about this, now we all know more about it. My concern about Rittenhouse going there had always just been, and you and I had discussed this with everyone on air, I'm trying to be honest with the audience and say, would I advise my own blood? Would I advise my own dear friend, family member, whatever it may be, go into that maelstrom and deal with these lunatic forces that have been unleashed in the city of Kenosha? And out of maybe prudence, risk aversion, I would say, I'm not sure you should do that. But that's a different thing than saying his motives for being there weren't beneficial, weren't heroic even. And I think the more we've seen of Kyle Rittenhouse, heard in his own words, why he was there, what he was doing there, what his purpose was, how he conducted himself, even in the midst of all of that just utter madness, malevolence. I mean, there was evil in that city that night. And Kyle Rittenhouse showed up anyway. And, you know, look, I know a lot of people that have been on the front lines of combat situations. I deployed as a CIA analyst to some of the war zones and saw the real door kickers and the people who are outside the wire wearing the uniform and what they were doing day in and day out. And for me, it's like, I might tell my own son, I don't know if I would want you to deploy, but it's still heroic when they make that choice to fight against those who would do us harm, who would tear down our society. So I think Kyle Rittenhouse has had, in some ways, one of the biggest, for anyone who's open to facts,
yes,
for anyone who's open to what really happened, the narrative transformation here, and I always thought it was self-defense, I always thought that he was being railroaded and all that, but the more you learn about this kid, the more likable, decent, honorable, and brave it's obvious he was, and that's why I think the Tucker interview was so powerful. And even because we hadn't heard from him, right? Except up on the stand when he's on trial for his life. And now that you see this, I think, though, Clay, you know, when you said the media failed, this is the part of it that we have to come to grips with. The media didn't fail. The left-wing media didn't fail. This is their purpose. Their purpose was to malign this kid and try to get him sent to prison forever. They are an organ of left-wing propaganda. They are with the mob. They are the PR team for Antifa. This is who they are. So I know you're saying they failed because they pretend that they're there to give the truth. But you and I and everyone listening knows that's not really their purpose. Their purpose is to achieve political ends. And they failed to get Kyle Rittenhouse sent to prison forever. But they convinced half the country that he murdered unarmed black protesters for a year. So they got pretty darn close to their goal of ruining his life.
Yeah, it's a good point. And when I say failed, this may be, again, me coming from the perspective of I want to believe that there is a great number of persuadable people out there. And increasingly, I think that's true. When I say failed, I'm really just genuinely disappointed at the laziness, Buck. Because I do agree there are certain people who are actually intelligent, and to use your word, have a malevolent idea, right? Like the malevolent. They're trying to destroy what is built up. I think the true number of evildoers that are smart enough to do that in the media is actually pretty small, right? Because as you know, most media are sheep. They follow wherever the herd goes. They don't do their own research. They don't actually look at the data or the facts. And what I see consistently is so many falsehoods being spread about this kid. And I think it's laziness more than it's evil intent.
Oh, I think it's evil intent. I think they're the propagandists of the left seeking to undermine core tenets of our civilization, our rule of law. Clay, I think they're true believers, man. I think most journalists there are journalists who are covering finance in Orlando. You know,
right,
I'm not talking about them.
I think
I'm
most
talking
journalists
about
are dumb.
The people,
and that they're sheep. Well, they, as opposed to evil.
There's a lot of dumb journalists, but the voices, the very loud, prominent national voices who were trying to destroy Kyle Rittenhouse. Here's how we can test my theory about their malevolence versus, of course, there's a lot of lazy, stupid journalists. There's a lot of lazy, stupid, a lot of things though, right? I think journalists in general are more delusional and less useful than most other professions.
I would agree to a large extent with that. Yeah,
there's no question.
Here's an easy test, Buck. If you knocked out half of mechanics or plumbers in this country, there would be a massive issue.
We'd have problems.
Yeah.
We'd have problems.
If you knocked out half of journalists, I don't think there would be much of an issue.
Yeah, and also if a plumber or a truck driver or, you know, a mechanic or a doctor, you know, a surgeon messes up big time, there are consequences. People are upset.
True.
With journos, that actually draws me to my next point. If it wasn't, remember what Kyle Rittenhouse said in the Tucker interview? He said that, you know, Joe Biden, running as a candidate,
we need to play that audio.
Defamed, we should grab that, defamed his character in a way that was malevolent, in a way that would rise to the standard. We talked about this.
Well,
can Kyle
that's
sue?
That's a great debate.
You know, that's going to be very interesting. I hope Kyle, you know, sues the you-know-what out of all of these people.
Yes.
But how many journalists, and when I use that term loosely, really media people, how many of them have come forward and said, you know what, I rushed to judgment on this one. I said things about Kyle Rittenhouse that were not true. I spread facts about zero.
Zero.
So if it were about laziness and if it were about we just made mistakes in our profession, we want to make this right, wouldn't they come forward? I mean, you look at somebody, you look at that absolute imbecile, Joe Scarborough, on the mornings over at MSNBC, just going on TV, untrue, over and over again about Rittenhouse. He's not embarrassed. I mean, it's like I said to you, when that guy wrote the New York Times op-ed, what'd we do the next day? Our team said, Buck, you got the guy's name wrong. Got to correct it right away. Got to use the right name for
people. You and I are legitimately embarrassed.
I'm not going to say I lost sleep over it, but I was annoyed at myself. You know, I was hitting the heavy bag a little harder. Point here being, we actually at least operate in the realm of fact, reason, and some accountability. Think of the brand value here. If you were a true journalist to come forward and say, I got Rittenhouse wrong, guys, and I'm embarrassed and I will do better.
Yes.
Not one person I've seen.
It is a great point. And by the way, let's play cut two. This is Rittenhouse last night. And this is legally, I think, an utterly fascinating question. If he brings lawsuits against all these people, including President of the United States, Joe Biden, who at the time was running for political office, listened to Rittenhouse last night about on Tucker addressing Joe Biden.
Mr. President, if I could say one thing to you, I would urge you to go back and watch the trial and understand the facts before you make a statement. It's actual malice defaming my character for him to say something like that.
It's not simply Biden who said that. It's a lot of people on television have said that. A lot. Dozens of people have said that. I'm sorry to tell you in case you haven't seen it.
Yeah. It's actually quite hysterical how nobody can go back and look at the facts of the case. He crossed state lines. False. He's a white supremacist. False. None of that is true. And the lies that they can just get away with spreading is just sickening. And it's a disgrace to this country.
If Joe Biden had any honor, Clay, if he were the good guy, you know, Joe from Scranton with the rolled up sleeve, you know, I'm one of the folks at the dinner table with you, the whole thing that he does, he would apologize like a real man for what he said about Kyle Rittenhouse. You and I both know, what are the chances of that happening?
0%. 0%. And we need to continue to talk about this because Rittenhouse has potentially options like Nicholas Sandman did. In the Covington Catholic case, they're more complicated, and I'll explain exactly why that is as we continue to roll through the rest of the show. By the way, Newt Gingrich scheduled to join us and our friend Will Cain from Fox News, all that on the horizon here with the Tuesday edition of the program. In the meantime, Salvation Army helps more than 30 million Americans in poverty battle daily challenges. You can help ensure hope marches on this holiday season. Across the country, millions of Americans are reeling from economic situations, including lost jobs, income loss, hunger, the inability to pay bills. They're being forced to make difficult decisions between basic needs. For many, these choices can mean the difference between home and homeless. Salvation Army has provided more than $100 million in rent and mortgage assistance over the last 18 months. And they have more than 7,600 centers of operation across the country. They provide nearly 10 million nights of shelter for those with nowhere else to go each year. You can make sure hope marches on this Christmas season by dialing #250 on your phone and saying Salvation Army. You'll have the opportunity to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message that links to a donation form. That is by dialing 250 on your phone and saying, Salvation Army, do it today.
Welcome to the second hour of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Sorry about my voice there. We are excited to be with you. We want to talk to you about all the latest news today. We'll have some friends joining too. Will Cain from Fox News at 2:30. Also going to be joined by Newt Gingrich later on this hour. But we want to talk to you first about the crime in major cities across America. Why is it happening? I mean, what's really going on? What do you think if you live in a place like San Francisco? Or what do you think if you live in a place that is telling you increasingly, just deal with property crime? It's not that big a deal. They steal your bike. They steal your laptop. They steal your wallet, your iPhone, whatever it may be. Maybe they need it more than you. Don't defend yourself and definitely don't expect law enforcement to come in a hurry and do something about it. What does that do to society? We often focus on murders. We focus on the highest profile, most heinous crimes when looking at a crime wave in a place like San Fran. And yes, in 2020, there was about a 30% increase in murders. And it's still much higher this year, 2021, than it was They always want to say pre-pandemic. It's really pre the rise of BLM 2.0. The pandemic was not actually something that caused an increase in crime or violence in other countries around the world. In fact, they saw drops. You had fewer people interacting with each other. You had fewer people out, more people in their homes. Ah, but the rise of BLM, undermining of police, progressive prosecutors deciding no cash bail allowed, let people out, don't punish them, and we see the consequences. The consequences are apparent here in New York City, where I am, where I live, there's no question about it. And even some Democrats are starting to figure this out. The property crime in San Francisco specifically has become so widespread that people increasingly find themselves just leaving. They don't want to deal with it anymore. And here is a woman named Michelle Tandler. Her thread on Twitter went viral. And Clay, I just want to tell folks some of what she says here so they get a sense of what it means to be in a big Democrat controlled blue city. She writes, one of my best friends in San Francisco was burglarized and robbed last week while sleeping. 2 days later, she saw three men peering into her backyard. She called the San Francisco Police Department sobbing. They did not come. I've never lived someplace where the government just doesn't care about you, she said. She and her husband are going to turn their home into a security fortress. Motion detectors, lights, cameras. I was told next time I have to say they have a weapon, she told me. Be careful, I warned. That could get you into trouble. I explained to her San Francisco has laws which could give someone the right to sue her for calling the cops if they aren't committing a crime. So what should she do if she sees people peering into her yard? I have no idea. Clay, there's so much here, but just first, this notion of I've never lived someplace where the government just doesn't care about you. Welcome to Live Dystopia, everybody. That's what's going on.
We keep saying it, and I think it's worth contemplating here. An absence of the law and an absence of punishment and an absence of jail time is a luxury of low crime rates. People can sit around and they can debate in the faculty lounge and they can debate inside of the prosecutor's office. Oh, you know what? We're putting people in prison for too long. We're treating criminals too harshly when crime goes down substantially. But when it comes back, and it always does, it's a circle, then immediately people say, you know what? It's time to lock them up and throw away the key. And Buck, we're repeating history all over again. In the 70s and the 80s, crime skyrocketed in this country. And what happened? Democrats, ironically, including Joe Biden himself, came up with the three strikes and you're out law that flooded our prisons with criminals, put more police on the street. And what happened? Crime plummeted. Rudy Giuliani in New York City led the charge. Cities became safer. Black, white, Asian, Hispanic, didn't matter who you were. You felt comfortable walking through Central Park. You wanted to go to Times Square instead of the peep shows. It had turned into Disneyland, right? And then what happens? All of a sudden, people take for granted the low crime rates. All of people start to make arguments. Oh, we're being unfair. Why are we putting these people in prison? And you let them out. $1,000 bail in Milwaukee. What happens? Guy gets behind the wheel. He mows through a crowd of people. Time after time, we are seeing the people who are committing the crimes, Buck, they ain't first-time offenders. They've got long rap sheets, including the guys, by the way, that Kyle Rittenhouse shot in Kenosha. And there is suddenly, you can feel it all over the country, even in San Francisco, even in L.A., even in New York City, liberal blue city bastions, people are saying it's time to give police back the ability to do their jobs and lock these guys up.
There's that line that a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged by reality. And what you're seeing in major cities across the country is that a conservative is now just a liberal who was mugged and who actually understands, or at least a moderate maybe, is a liberal who has been mugged and says, what the heck is going on? Why is this rising in my neighborhood, in my town, my city? And the authorities are all talking about prison reform. The authorities are talking about getting people back on the streets faster. And they made, let's not forget, while we have this huge rise in crime across the country, that is a fact We have the numbers. This isn't some perception. The biggest increase in 100 years in murders in 1 year in America has occurred in the last 12 to 18 months. And here we are now seeing that these results are catastrophic. They're horrific. What were the Democrats focused in on that whole time? Racist cops shooting unarmed black men. BLM. That's what they wanted to talk about. Oh, really? That was the primary issue of law enforcement during that period. That's what we're supposed to be all focused in on. And then you have the idiot politicians out there. And there are so many of them. De Blasio in New York, maybe the worst mayor in the country. I think he is the worst mayor in the country. But there's a lot of bad mayors. London Breed of San Francisco, in response to the viral video now of, I believe, and it might have been the Chicago mass retail theft, organized retail theft that occurred. It's tough to keep them all straight, Clay, because we all see the video of it, right? But I think it was the one in California. There were 80 people who ran into a store and just stole, you know, $10,000 handbags as fast as they could. London Breed, mayor of San Francisco, says, we're going to handle this. We talked about Union Square yesterday in San Francisco. We're going to limit vehicle traffic to that area. So now everybody has to walk further and deal with the inconvenience so that the theft mob thugs don't drive right up to the store after they smash the window and steal everything and are able to drive away. That's their plan. That's part of the plan, at least in San Francisco. It's outrageous.
It's failed. It's a failed policy. And it's happening everywhere, all over the country. I saw the videos from Rodeo Drive where people were just walking right in and stealing things. And it's getting worse and worse everywhere. And what is going to happen? This is my argument. I turned to my wife during Yellowstone the other night. I was watching it, Buck. And Yellowstone, I know you haven't watched it, but Yellowstone, there are, I would say, almost vigilante cops that, or livestock agents, for lack of a better way of describing it. But they take the law into their own hands when justice is not otherwise being meted out. I think, remember they were canceling cops on television show? They were trying to do away with what's the show? You're not going to know. Paw Patrol, because they had a cop character. They're like, oh, can we have a cop puppy on this show? There is going to be, in short order and rapid fashion, a swing back in the direction of, we want badass cops out protecting our streets, kicking ass of criminals and putting them in prison for years and years. White, black, Asian, Hispanic people are all going to be demanding it. And the AOCs of the world, the Ilhan Omars, all of these people who've been saying, oh, we got to clean out all the federal prisons. You know, that's their plan. They want the entire federal prison system empty. That's their plan.
Rashida Tlaib, yes, is pushing this very aggressively. And then when asked about it,
by Axios, to their credit,
that's
Jonathan,
right,
Swan,
Jonathan,
I think,
Swan,
interviewing,
yeah,
her,
when asked about it, says, oh, but it's going to be sort of a phased in thing. And yeah, but you still want to empty out the federal prisons. I mean, there are people in federal prison who are there because they were crossing state lines with, you know, severed heads in the trunk, lady. I mean, give me a break. We're going to empty the federal prisons. The people that think
madness,
these things, have never been the victim of a violent crime themselves. The politicians and the media jerks that push this stuff, they've never had somebody they know robbed, raped, murdered. They don't know what it's like to
go
through that.
They have private security.
And of course, they've got private and armed security. And they simply think that we're paying the price as a society. It's all of our faults, you see, Clay. They diffuse the responsibility for criminality on all of us. This has been a left-wing approach to crime for a long time. And it also makes everybody feel unsafe and miserable, and therefore more likely to be open to radical plans and radical changes, right? You immiserate the population. This is Marx. This is how they do it. You immiserate the population, and then they're much more willing, at least a portion of it will be much more willing to go along with crazy ideas because, well, this is awful, right?
You also threaten, Buck, every white male politician who raises any issue about this as being racist. That's the immediate attack. That's why Joe Biden walked back his comments about the jury in the Rittenhouse case and had to issue a statement talking about how angry he was. That's why Bill de Blasio, who is a feckless, pathetic leader, is terrified of anybody in New York City if he decides to bring back stop and frisk or bring back plainclothes police. They're terrified they're going to get called racist, Buck. White male politicians who are Democrats, first of all, I have no idea how they can even still call themselves Democrats. They're terrified of their own party coming after them.
This is the way it is, folks. It's going to continue to play out with Democrats trying to explain to you that they're not responding. They're going to say it's the pandemic. They're going to say it's failed systems and failed policing. No, they are causing failure within the system, and we can all see it. And San Francisco is just one example of it. There are so many cities across the country where this mentality is having terrible effect. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation is making the holidays brighter for our nation's Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and severely injured veterans and first responders. For many of these families, the holidays are a tough reminder of the sacrifice their hero made for us. The foundation is giving away at least a home a day from Thanksgiving through New Year's Eve. This is their season of hope. With each mortgage-free home, the foundation is delivering on its promise to do good and never forget. For some of these families, they have the comfort of knowing they can stay in the home that they picked with their loved one, the home where they made precious holiday memories. For families in a new home, they're creating memories they'll cherish forever. But Clay, how is it possible?
Yeah, Buck, all this is possible because of your generosity. You know, our listeners have given over $5 million to Tunnel to Towers. You can help add to that number by supporting America's greatest heroes and their families. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. Welcome in, hour number 3, Tuesday edition. I am Clay Travis. He is Buck Sexton. I know many of you have begun your travels for Thanksgiving in 2 days' time. I hope you're with friends and family. Want to let you know, download the podcast. A lot of people on the roads. Maybe you're flying as well. Want to make sure you have something to listen to. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, download it, sign up. Help us set a new record in November for listenership on the podcast. And we also want to let you know, Buck and I will both be on live tomorrow with you. I know that a lot of you in the past several decades became very fond of Rush Limbaugh's Thanksgiving special. We are going to have James Golden on with us. We will do our best to honor Rush's legacy and also continue to spread the traditions that so many of you hold so fondly for this show. Want to let you know that we will be with you tomorrow as a part of that. We'll be off on Thanksgiving. We'll have a best of. And then Buck is going to be in on Friday with a live show while I will be hanging out with my family. Appreciate him being here for that Friday. So that is the roadmap for the rest of the week for everybody out there. Just getting in your car, I hope that a lot of you had an opportunity so far to listen to Kyle Rittenhouse's interview with Tucker Carlson on Fox News last night. Fantastic examination of the case and also of Kyle Rittenhouse himself. One of the questions, and by the way, let me let you also know, we're going to be joined by Will Kane, a friend of both Buck and Mines, at the midway point of this hour, just after 2:30 Eastern. One of the big topics that has been out there has been, what sort of legal recourse does Kyle Rittenhouse have now that he has been found not guilty of murder by virtue of self-defense, given all of the insults and all of the lies that have been spread by him in the mainstream media, by politicians, by MSNBC, by CNN, by the New York Times and the Washington Post? I'm going to get into that in a moment. But first, here is a cut from Kyle Rittenhouse talking about the legal representation he had and the fact he says they left him in jail while they raised money, he says, for their own benefit. This is cut one.
87 days of not being with my family for defending myself and being taken advantage to, being used for a cause by John Pierce and Lynn Wood, trying to raise money so they can take it for their own benefit, not trying to set me free. I could have been bailed out by mid-September, but they wanted to keep me in jail until November 20th.
Buck, I mean, that also is awful. I mean, I don't think most people talk about the fact that this kid, who was 100% innocent of any wrongdoing, we know based on the jury's determination, spent 87 days in prison. That's over basically the 3 months of his life.
The alleged justification for this from his lawyers was that he was safer in jail. And I can tell you that is not the case. There's actually a lot of evidence to show that people you're much more likely to be assaulted, to be attacked across a whole range of contexts in prison than outside of prison. Or in jail. And so this just goes to show you there were people early on who, I mean, for Kyle to say that at this stage too is absolutely damning for these two guys. It's a shame because I actually like the Richard Jewell movie in which Lin Wood is essentially the hero, right? But it's still a very good movie, and it's really just an entire movie that's like, don't trust the FBI and don't talk to them. That's what the movie actually teaches you. But Kyle was able to push through this, and really, when he was giving this interview with Tucker, Clay, it becomes clear that he had so much poise and mental fortitude for a kid his age. He's facing life in prison.
Yes.
He wasn't yet even 18 years old when this incident happened. Not only is he facing life in prison, but very powerful people all across, I mean, the now president, then candidate for the Democrat side for the presidency, basically said that this guy should rot in jail for the rest of his life, right? It's one thing if you're wrongfully accused and you're just going through the trial. That's got to be terrifying. Imagine being wrongfully accused, an entire political party, the Democrat elite's media apparatus, the left, the organized left in general, is screaming, screeching for you to spend the rest of your life in prison while that's happening. Think about how terrifying that would be.
Buck, I'll tell you this. Lawyers don't lose sleep over defending people they think are guilty. We lose sleep over defending people we think are innocent. Because if you're defending a guilty person, you have a constitutional obligation to defend them to the best of your ability. But if they end up being convicted, it may be the just result in a case. Lawyers lose sleep, and I guarantee you this was the case for the lawyers, credit them, the defense attorneys who won the case for Kyle Rittenhouse. I guarantee you those guys tossed and turned, in addition to the fact that Rittenhouse himself did, many nights worried that they were not going to be able to do the best possible job because this kid was innocent of all wrongdoing and they knew he faced potential life in prison. Let me just say this too. There's a lot of discussion out there, Buck, about what sort of legal opportunities Kyle Rittenhouse has now that a jury has determined that he's not guilty of the crime when he was labeled a murderer, a white supremacist, a domestic terrorist, all these different things on CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, The Washington Post, among others. And I have argued for a long time that New York Times v. Sullivan needs to be, this is the sort of foremost case in the First Amendment jurisprudence, that it needs to be refined for our modern era. Because, and this is getting a little bit in the weeds, but just for people out there to think about, one of the major challenges in holding these big media companies accountable for the lies they spread about you is New York Times v. Sullivan sets up a distinction between a public and a private figure. If you're a public figure, you have to show, and that's why when we played in hour one, Kyle Rittenhouse said that the media company showed actual malice against him. You have to show actual malice if you're a public figure in order to recover under defamation standards. I think we need to reconsider, and Scalia and Thomas have said this in Supreme Court opinions, we need to reconsider New York Times v. Sullivan in light of the social media era in which we live in now, where basically everybody's a public figure, Buck, because if you're in a diner and somebody takes a video of you and it goes viral, you become a public figure because you said or did something, even if you don't want to be a public figure. And so this distinction about what damages can be gained for public versus private figures is so challenging when it comes to Kyle Rittenhouse and people of his nature who may be 100% innocent, may have lies spread about them, but because of the public figure standard of New York Times v. Sullivan, it's really hard for them to recover.
And yet Nick Sandman, as we all know, is out there advocating for Kyle Rittenhouse to sue. And Sandman, it is believed, I think the settlements were kept private.
That's
but
right.
It is believed that he got a pretty substantial payout. But that's to your point about how anyone can become a public figure,
yes,
and therefore the public-private figure distinction. That's more sensible in the era of newspapers.
1960s, where, it made sense.
Where there are very few people that find themselves an issue of public concern who aren't either, an accused criminal or a politician or, somebody who's already in the public eye. The reality here with Nick Sandman was he was on a school trip, as we all know, and someone marched up to him and took a video of his face, and he didn't do anything, and all of a sudden they're calling him, you know, a little smug white supremacist and all this other crazy stuff that they were saying, instead of pointing out that an adult and a very, you know, strange fellow was harassing him. Sandman, it looks like he... I don't know what the payout was, right? There are people that make all kinds of claims it was very large, it was actually very small, who knows? But there at least should be the accountability that we could all have is stop thinking that any of these are news organizations. Stop believing that when you read the New York Times or you watch CNN, they are making a good faith effort to give you unbiased, non-politicized information. That is not what they are doing. They have to give you accurate facts for the most part, because otherwise nobody will believe them. But it's about things like, what do they cover? How do they cover it? What do they not cover? That's often the single biggest editorial decision. And that's why I'm so outraged sitting here, as we have no updates, it seems, from anywhere right now, from anyone, about what happened with Waukesha and that mass murderer. How is that even possible that we don't have more information? Who's asking the police? Who's making sure that we find out what the current status of the motive is? So what they cover, what they don't cover is obviously a huge part of all of this. I think that it would be good to see a lawsuit here. I know that's what you're talking about. But more to the point, ever just understand these are warring propaganda machines out there in the media. They don't care that they lied to you. They don't care they lied to you about Donald Trump and Russia collusion, about Jussie Smollett, about the Duke lacrosse case. Go down the list. I mean, just think of about Hunter Biden's laptop being not real or being disinformation or whatever. I mean, they said the Hunter Biden laptop... I think it was the Washington Post published all these former Intel nerds, and I can say that because I am one, who are saying, oh, it's Russian disinformation. None of them are embarrassed by this. None of them feel like, oh, gosh, I shouldn't have done that, because they served the purpose at the time. Go on offense against Trump and the right. And that's what all these media organizations do. The moment that they have to change even the facts to serve that purpose, they will. So, yeah, sue them. You're not going to sue them out of business. They're insured. They have error and omissions insurance. You're not going to be able to do that. Sue them, although they did do that to Gawker, if you remember.
Gawker did.
Peter Thiel, God bless him, did it. Gawker was a cesspool online of the worst kind. And so there is a precedent here.
Well, and this goes to why he should sue. This is my argument. He needs to sue because... we need to set the precedent for all those things that you just said, Buck. There needs to be a standard other than New York Times v. Sullivan that makes media companies worry that they might get hit with $100 million or $1 billion judgments that could shatter their ability to continue as viable business entities. Because right now, New York Times v. Sullivan, which was set in 1960s, in a time, Buck, when the only time the average person's name appeared in the newspaper was when they might be born and when they might die, the idea of a public-private figure dichotomy might have made sense in the 1960s. It doesn't make sense in our modern era. And you shouldn't be able to use Kyle Rittenhouse's public persona as a reason to get so much wrong in your reporting about him. There need to be consequences. And that's why we need an updated version of New York Times v. Sullivan in this country in a substantial way. Because for people out there who believe that our media is broken, and I am with you, and I believe that it is in fact broken, one of the best ways that we could change that is by altering the law, New York Times v. Sullivan, updating it for the modern era and eliminating the standards and practices that were put in place in the 1960s for a new modern era where there needs to be more consequences for these major for-profit newspaper institutions. Meantime, Salvation Army's dedicated to doing the most good by meeting human needs wherever, whenever, and however they can. Every year, they help more than 30 million Americans in poverty battle daily challenges. You can help ensure that hope marches on this holiday season. Last year, the Salvation Army provided more than 214 million meals through drive-through distribution, grab-and-go, home delivery, and more. This year, the Salvation Army is working hard to meet the demands with food pantries, which supply fresh fruit, produce, canned goods, and healthy frozen items for free to so many people who need them. They have so much that they do for sit-down programs that provide hot meals, valuable human action, interaction, mobile meals delivering sustenance to those who can't reach a food distribution center. They will help so many people out there, tens of millions, the most vulnerable members of society, help to escape the daily burdens of food insecurity. Make sure Hope March is on this Christmas season by dialing 250, that's #250 on your phone and saying Salvation Army. You'll have the opportunity to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message, that's #250, that links to a Salvation Army donation form. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. A couple of days here before Thanksgiving. We'll be live with you tomorrow. Buck will be with you on Friday. Best of on Thanksgiving. Will Kane, we're getting set up right now. Do you want to take a couple more calls while we roll with him right now, Buck?
We will take some calls, but we got our man Will Kane with us right now. He is the co-host of Fox and Friends. Co-hosts are obviously the best. Co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend with our buddy Pete Hegseth and Rachel Campos Duffy. Mr. Will Kane of Fox News. My old buddy, how are you?
What's up, Buck? What's up, Clay?
We're good, man.
What's shaking, my man?
We got to get you all in studio with us sometime, although the three amigos, so we can chat about all the things happening in America and around the world. Will, I'll start with this one. We got so many we could do. We don't have too much time, so let's get into it. The Democrat Party in panic mode from their own research, finding out that their brand is in the dumpster. What's going on?
Well, it turns out calling everybody in the country who disagrees with you is a racist is an unpopular message. And after their loss in Virginia, it looks like the lesson they took from that is, let's triple down. Let's triple racism, everybody. Yeah, it's not a good brand, Buck. It's not a good brand, Clay. And I think, you know, it's not just in the name calling, it's in the policies. Clearly, critical race theory is an incredibly unpopular ideological concept. People don't want their children being taught to be neo-racist and embrace segregationist policies. And then beyond that, how about not destroying our pocketbooks with an inflation? So I think from top to bottom, here's the easiest way to distill it, Buck. What's going well for the Democratic Party? If you can answer that question, you can answer what's wrong with their brand.
It's well said. Will, we got to hang out a couple of days last week in Fort Lauderdale. It was a lot of fun at the Fox Patriot Awards. We talked a lot. I don't know if we talked about this, but I like to look for things that are somewhat moving in a positive direction. And in the world of sports, I was really encouraged, Will, by the WTA coming out, standing up to China, doing the opposite of what the NBA said, saying, look, it may cost us a lot of money, but the way you're treating this missing tennis star who's alleged sexual assault against a prominent Communist Party official, it was everything that the NBA should have done. I was really encouraged by them standing up to China. Were you?
I'm encouraged, and I'd like to see more American businesses, Clay, show and exhibit some semblance of a moral backbone. I mean, look, you're a capitalist. I'm a capitalist. Buck is a capitalist. Everyone listening wants to make the most money they can for their talent and to provide for their family. But money, I mean, I'm sorry how cliched it may sound, money is not the end of our story. We're moral beings. We're beings that have to go to sleep at night and sleep soundly. And the WTA found their line in the sand. They said, disappearing one of our stars isn't worth the money. Here's a really interesting question, I think, Clay. What do you think if the NBA were in the same position, their choice would be? Let's say Stephon Marbury, he's retired now, but you remember Stephon Marbury. After he washed out of the NBA, he went to play in China for a lot of years. You remember that? So what if Stephon Marbury had disappeared while he was playing in China? What would the NBA's response to that have been? And by the way, that's not even a perfect analogy because he wasn't an active NBA player at the time. So we'd have to find an active NBA player who disappears in China and ask ourselves, what would the NBA do?
I think they'd pretend it didn't happen.
We're speaking to Will Kane here. He is of Fox News. You can check him out on the weekends hosting Fox and Friends in the morning. Will, also, you have a podcast, right? The Will Kane podcast, which folks should be checking out, too. You know, Will, we have a few things in common. We hosted together at The Blaze many years ago, and also both of us spent a time at CNN. Earlier in the show, Clay and I were talking about how the media essentially now, when I say the media, I mean the big legacy corporate Democrat media, doesn't seem ashamed at all about what's happened here with Kyle Rittenhouse. In fact, if anything, they either pretend they weren't lying about it or they're happy that they got away with it as long as they did. How long is that sustainable as a model for them?
Until there's an accountability mechanism, Buck, that is undeniable. You and I were talking earlier this week, Buck, about the progression of CNN. So I was a conservative contributor analyst at CNN from about 2010 to 2014. It was a different CNN than it is today. It was a biased CNN. They weren't objective. They were still liberal, but they were simply biased. Buck, I think you were there in, what, 14 to 16,
yep,
roughly, maybe in that time frame?
I was there when they lost their mind. Like, I was there for the nervous breakdown of CNN.
Yes. Yeah, so I would say they were making the transition while you were there from biased to propagandist.
I mean, maybe it was my fault, but...
and I think what we're watching now is them make the move from propagandist to activist, play an active role in the news cycle. And MSNBC best embodies this with the photographer trailing the bus, the jury bus, in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. But this weekend, I said this on Fox and Friends, Buck. I said, hey, I'm a little naive. I thought after the trial was over, they'd stop lying. But they didn't stop lying. And it's shocking to me because I would think, okay, ratings aren't the accountability mechanism because their ratings are in the tank and clearly they're not paying the price for low ratings. But what about shareholders and potential defamation suits? Does not the shareholder of MSNBC or Comcast or Discovery go, this is bad business. This is hurting us. And by the way, the answer to that might be yes, because John Malone, who owns Liberty Media, which owns Discovery, which owns CNN, seems to be sort of putting the feelers out there that I don't like what's happening here at CNN.
Yeah, he said, I think that's a credit to him. He kind of cracked the whip and said, this organization is a shell of what it used to be when, Buck, you were there and when Will was there. And I don't know if it was a coincidence, but did you guys see the video where they were talking about the WTA and the response in China, and they left up their broadcast window in China to show that they were being censored in real time? I thought that was pretty powerful of CNN to point out, hey, we're speaking truth to power for a change. This is what China's doing as we are discussing their disappearing of this Chinese tennis star.
Yeah, and that's coming face to face with truth in China, Clay. And I would love to see, and by the way, Malone is a new majority shareholder of CNN.
Yeah.
So it's not as though he's been there for some time. He's new, so he can institute change if he wants to. I'd like to see them face truth in the United States of America, not just in China, on race relations. Buck, you had a tweet earlier this week, and I thought you put it really well. For much of my career, and Clay, you and I talked recently, and I'm curious where you are on this. I really loved the idea of a lofty debate of ideas, like a battle of ideas. I'm right, you're left, I'm conservative, you're liberal. I want to see which idea wins the day. And Buck, you had a tweet, you said, unfortunately, that's not the age we're in. We're in an age where we're battling over basic truths. And I think you put it really well. That's what the fight is today. It's over truth and lies, not right and left.
Check out Will Cain's podcast and also look for him on Fox and Friends, where he is co-hosting on weekends, and look for him to pop up on Fox all throughout the week. Will, when are you hosting? You'll be hosting again soon, the 7 p.m., I know. And people should look for you on the weekends on Fox and Friends. Anything else you want to promote for the people listening across the country?
I'll be hosting that 7 p.m. primetime show the week of December 13th, as you mentioned, Fox and Friends. And later this week on the Will Cain podcast, I've got an hour-long conversation with Andy Ngo, the most hated journalist on the left in America.
He's such a brave, brave little guy, man. Andy Ngo. Will Cain, everybody. Check it out. Thanks, Will. Great to have you on.
Thanks, fellas.
The Tallulah Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since 9/11, when so many Americans rushed to help those injured when our nation was attacked. The 20th anniversary of that event was just 2 months ago. We witnessed the foundation honor the Americans we lost on 9/11, as well as those we've lost in the war on terrorism. Their chairman and CEO, Frank Siller, was front and center on a 600-mile walk connecting the people and the scenes involved in those attacks 20 years ago. Thanks to your support, Towers of Light returned to the Pentagon and Shanksville Memorials. And for the first time, our country recognized the people we lost to 9/11-related illness through the foundation's name-reading ceremony.
And now the foundation's bringing hope to heroes and their families, giving away at least a home a day from Thursday this Thanksgiving to New Year's Eve. You can honor our vow to never forget. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.